Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Chris Evans here, and welcome to the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast from Virgin Radio. In the week that we said goodbye to Her Majesty the Queen, our Majesty the Queen, our Queen, Queen Elizabeth II. Coming up today, British TV legend Sileni Henry discusses his new memoir, Rising to the Surface. The always hilarious Russell Howard chats about the return of the Russell Howard Hour on Sky Max. Awesome actor Damien Maloney fills us in on the brand new series of Sky Max's Brassic. All of that and so much more to come. So Jack, kick things off and tell us who's up first.
He has played Othello on the stage and even had a TV show named after him. But I have a theory. I believe his greatest role is that he is secretly Pudsey Bear. His new memoir, Rising to the Surface, is out now. From Dudley to Middle-earth. He's got stories aplenty. Knight of the Realm and Knight of Our Hearts. It's Sir Lenny Henry!
How'd you like that?
That's crazy.
How'd you like that, apples?
Wow. That's a lot of... I'd cut down on the caffeine. Half,
so says you.
By half, maybe.
This is... He's channeling his inner... Younger Lenny, which you're talking about.
Oh, I got a lot of energy, but that's off the chain. Thank you very much for that introduction.
What a book, Lenny. This is a great book.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, mate. It was such an enjoyable, fascinating and enlightening read. I've known you for a while. I'm lucky enough to have known you and all the gang. You know, I was very much a student of what we do for a living now, in one way or another, watching you and your pals and your ex-missus on telly. But I didn't know half of the stuff that's in the book. Brilliant. Let's go back to, first of all, New Faces, 1970s. For people who don't know what New Faces was, it was very much the sort of...
Britain's Got Talent.
Because of Britain's Got Talent, rather than more than anything else. So
yeah, it was a talent show that was set in the Midlands at ATV Studios, where they made Crossroads. And so I got to see the Crossroads Studios when I was 16 years old. Couldn't believe it. Also, subsidised canteen, which meant that you got virtually free egg and bacon. I loved it at ATV Studios. And you basically went in there and you did a practice during the day, and then suddenly you were on television in front of 16 million people that evening. And it changed my life. It was an absolute game changer. There was a panel of people, and there were comedians and social commentators of the day. Tony Hatch, who wrote Downtown and Don't Sleep in the Subway, Baby, was the Simon Cowell of his day.
And the theme tune to Crossroads.
And the theme tune to Crossroads. I think Clifford Elson, who was a Daily Mail critic, was on. Martin Jackson, who was also a TV critic. And Arthur Askey, comedian. Ted Ray, comedian. And they basically gave you marks out of 10 for personality, content, and things like that. And Tony Hatch, who was the kind of real mean-spirited, he appeared guy of the day, gave me 10 out of 10 and just said I had potential.
He's like the Simon Cowell of his
day. Said Lenny Henry's got potential, watch this space kind of thing.
And you were 15 at the time.
I was 16.
16 at the time.
And the week after I was on the show, mid-January, I was in Leicester for some reason, and a bus driver stopped the bus. This black bus driver stopped the bus and went, Lenny Henry! And I thought, ooh, okay, that's different. That had never happened before. My life had completely changed within the space of 2 or 3 days.
And so,
extraordinary.
So from that to... We're going to have to fast forward loads because there's so much in the book, right? Fast forward to Tiz Was
extraordinary. Anarchic children's television show produced and written by Chris Tarrant, featuring people like Frank Carson, John Gorman, Bob Cowdies and Spit... the dog and the brilliant Sally James. And it was basically a wake up on a Saturday morning and go crazy, like in opposition to Swap Shop, which is the BBC. Let's all do our homework and just eat a nutritious meal while we watch television. We were more like, yeah, this is what we want. That was our version of Saturday morning television. And it was fantastic. And when you see me in any video on Tiz Was in the archives looking happy on Tiz Was, it's because I was. Yeah, it was probably one of the best times of my life.
Oh, you were on Tis Was. You Tis Were on Tis Was. Lenny, there's so much to go through here.
And it's all in the book, ladies and gentlemen.
It is, and it's brilliant. We've missed out the Cannon and Ball era.
Thank you. Once again, thank you.
So Cannon and Ball, Summer Seasons, just speak to that for a second.
I did Summer Seasons for several years, and it's basically, if you're a comedian, it's like being in the Foreign Legion. You get sent somewhere for 22 weeks, and you have to do two shows a day and like it. And I had to do the North Pier Theatre in Blackpool. It's basically walking half a mile out into the North Sea.
Just by the Butlin Metropole Hotel.
And then doing a show for twice a week. And you knew it was going to be bad because you'd walk out and there'd be all these audiences steaming because they've been in the rain for an hour waiting to get in. And Ken Dodd used to overrun on his first show. So he'd always do an hour, like 90 minutes, which was far longer than he was supposed to do. And then he'd always say something like, if a bunch of steaming, soaking people angry, run in and sit on your lap, don't worry, it's just the second house. And it was always that thing of trying to please this audience in a 20-minute set and hope that they liked it because they paid good money to see you and you wanted to do the best you could, but often they just weren't having it.
Let's talk about, we've got 2 minutes left, what's not in the book, Rings of Power, my friend. Come on.
The tallest hobbit in the universe.
Bada bada bing. Tell us about working on the most expensive TV show ever made, the $1 billion mega series.
But the thing is, when we were doing it, we couldn't think about the money because otherwise it'd do our heads.
It's $1 billion, isn't it?
Yeah, but I can't think about that. For me, it was an exciting opportunity to be a person of colour in a fantasy space where people of colour just aren't. So I wanted to be in that space because I've been reading comics and books like this since I was 8. And I just wanted to go, here I am. Because when I was a kid, I was watching things like The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and Amos Burke and The Avengers. Da, 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 watching all those shows and going, I'd love to have a pointy quiff and chase after the bad guy with a gun. And suddenly I get asked to be in The Power of the Rings and I went, yeah, I want to do that. And I met the showrunners, JD and Patrick, and said, so what's it going to be? How's it going to be? And they said, you're going to be Irish. Okay, Dave Allen, Jimmy Cricket. I got a letter from me mammy. I can do that. And they said, and you're going to be a Harfoot, which is 1,000 years before the Hobbits. And I said, that's interesting. And they're going to be nomadic. Okay, a nomadic tribe of people where there's people of colour there. That's great. Because now people are going to watch The Power of the Rings and they're going to see elves and hobbits and dwarves and they're going to see themselves and go, cool, I want to do that. And that's a 21st century way of looking at telling stories, and I salute it.
Life is a roller coaster. Showbiz is the same under a magnifying glass. Ups and downs, highs and lows, swings and roundabouts. You are in an excellent place now, aren't you?
Yeah, it's a really good time. I'm a granddad. I'm loving that. I'm in The Power of the Rings. I'm in The Witcher on Christmas Day. All 4 episodes drop on Christmas Day. It's extraordinary. And I've got this book, and I'm doing children's books too. There's a book called The Book of Legends coming out soon about two kids who go into a magical kingdom to rescue their mum. And I've really enjoyed the whole write. You know, I was literally like Angela Lansbury in Murder, She Wrote during lockdown. It was ridiculous. I just wrote and wrote and wrote because I love the work. And life is difficult to navigate, but the work has handholds. And I think that's what this book is about.
You look fantastic.
Thank you very much. You don't look so bad yourself.
No, seriously, you look unbelievable. As well as I've ever seen you.
Thank you. I think when you pass through the diabetes cosmic cloud, you've got to figure out how to live your life. And it affects everybody in my family. So we're all trying to do that kind of diet thing and looking after ourselves, sweeteners in coffee and not so many pies. And it's doing me good.
Miss the pies, though. Lenny,
pies are great.
I literally could talk to you probably for the rest of my life.
Thank you very much. It's been a joy.
You're amazing, mate. Rising to the Surface, it's out now, Sir Lenny Henry. Got to go. Goodbye, everyone. Bye bye.
See you. Ta-ra.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show.
Virgin Radio.
Certain monks can be in such a meditative state that they will never laugh, even if you show them the video of the sneezing panda.
But this next guest has a solution with his show, The Russell Howard Hour, returning to Sky Max tonight at 10:30 p.m. It's the funny guy from TV. I'm so excited, I've even showered. A stand-up comedian and stand-up fella, please welcome Russell Howard.
Good morning, wow. Russell. How are you?
I am in a terrific mood. What a lovely, lovely welcome.
Yeah.
I love the fact that
you've had a wash just to chat to me. How sweet.
No, he had a wash just so he could say showered because it rhymed with Howard, but it was so far apart nobody noticed, including you. How are you, Russell?
I'm terrific. I was listening to that chat about cars. My first car was a Peugeot 205.
Great car.
And apparently, they're now a bit of a collector's item. If I'd held on to it, it would be worth more than $5,000. How weird is that?
More than it was when you bought it, depending on what condition it's in. What kind of model? What kind of 205? Was it? It wasn't a GTI, presumably, because you're a kid.
No. It was a blue Peugeot 205, and I crashed it into a snowplow the only day that it snowed in 1997. And my granddad fixed it.
Wow.
Magical granddad powers. That was back when cars could be tinkered and fixed.
I know. And there was a community, Sunday morning community of blokes usually tinkering with cars outside and having a chat and a cup of tea, you know, whilst doing so. Oh, Russell. Yeah, my son said, we were talking over the weekend about something. And I said, what do you like most about... He's only 13 and he's talking to his mate. Oh, they were talking about the Minions. They went to see the new Minions film, Russell, right?
Right.
And I said, what do you like most about it? And do you know what he said? Dad, nostalgia. I went, what?
Oh my God.
You're 13. he said, we grew up with the Minions movies. I said, you're still growing up. You haven't grown up yet. What are you talking about?
Oh my God. What a beautiful image of your child just looking out of the window. I miss the old days, father.
Yes.
I love it when that happens. You get my sister's kids, they watch the, the Queen's meeting with Paddington Bear.
Oh, yes.
So there's a four-year-old and he was talking to the nine-year-old. And watching the four-year-old explain to the nine-year-old what had happened with the Queen is one of the best things I've ever seen. Because the four-year-old turned to the nine-year-old and said, you need to sit down. Paddington Bear is actually real. Sit down. He's actually real. I've seen it. He eats marmalade sandwiches with the Queen. He's actually real. And the nine-year-old couldn't believe it. It was wonderful. It's like this lovely moment of innocence.
All right, so it hasn't been the leanest of weeks for you as far as Comedy Gold is concerned. What might be on the Russell Howard Hour upon its return for its new season this evening, 10:30 p.m. on Sky Max?
So it's all about Liz Truss becoming our new leader, and we've sort of taken like a deep dive into her behaviour for the past 12 years. Turns out Therese Coffey, who's one of her closest supporters, said that the biggest thing she'd done in politics was reintroduce beavers. We've got a look at her £235 million cut, which led to all the kind of sewage discharge that we've had this year. We've got playground politics where all the kids are saying what they'd like to say to Boris Johnson. And we've got the stand-up with Jamali Maddox. And I'm doing quite a long section about artificial intelligence and trying to sort of, look into that. So it's pretty stuffed. It's like a half an hour show. It's banging. It's really funny.
All right. So, and how do you feel about it? You know, what's your vibe?
What's my vibe? Vibe is it's just lovely to be back. There's kind of 500 people in the studio. They're all laughing. There's a real energy. It feels like, I feel a bit like an apocalypse clown, if I'm honest. But it's a really interesting time to talk about sort of societal issues and political issues because people are genuinely fascinated. And my job as a comedian is to kind of poke fun and make people laugh at the madness of it all, I think.
Okay, now you're dead busy. You're so busy that we got a lovely message from your people last night. Because you were due to come in live today and it would have been lovely to see
you. I'm gutted, man.
No, I understand. I understand. I get it. Because you're genuine. This show takes a lot of prep, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I start at 10 o'clock. So we got the guys, they'll be on a Zoom with me. And then we start writing it again. So we'll be looking at Liz Truss's kind of energy bill and seeing the effect that has. Because last week, some of the headlines coming out, that there was talk of like pubs closing. It's an amazing story, but I think Tom Kerridge. Going, the bill's gone up from like $60,000 to $420,000. So I quite like the idea of trying to write a bit about the majesty of pubs and why we can't let them close. So do you know what I mean? It's like trying to find a bit of, I don't know, kind of soul inside the steel of the news, I guess.
Yeah, and that means in Tom's case, that increase means that he's going to have to sell 10 more steaks this weekend to cover the cost. Morning, Tom. Right, who else? So on your radar this week, you told us, do you have an ongoing narrative throughout the series?
No idea, because it just, we just react to the news, so whatever happens. That's what's so exciting about it, that you genuinely, every week you start fresh, and it's new kind of comedy homework. And I love it. And it just, what I love doing, I like making a comedy club funny show for TV.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a live show. We kind of do it in 45 minutes and, yeah, it's brilliant.
Well,
it's who knows what's going to happen, man.
Okay, well, it's a tough nut to crack and you'll be all over it. Russell, when you can't make it over here, you're very welcome. Come and co-host the show. Just stick around. Just have some fun with us. It'd be great.
Love to.
All right. Cheers, Russell.
See you, man.
Ta-da.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show.
Virgin Radio.
They say you should put yourself in uncomfortable positions, but this group of likely lads take it to the next level. He stars in the fourth series of Sky original comedy Brassic, which is back on Wednesday. Now, they say these lads are trouble and even a wee bit scrawny, but with laughs like this, how can you not love them? It's Damien Maloney!
All right, Damien!
Good morning, how are you?
I'm great. I'm getting a bit mojo back. Ocean's 11.
Oh, yes.
Meets Quadrophenia. Mm-hmm. Meets Top Gear. Meets Cash in the Attic. What do you think?
I'm very honoured to be associated with all of those shows. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. What I love about Brassic is just how funny it is. You know, and we start here on series four. We've got cannibals. We get kidnapped by cannibals. We buy a greyhound that won't race. We get lost in the woods and stumble across a satanic cult. And then Tomo has a new car. We were talking about cars earlier. He has a mobile erotic parlor, which we tear around the countryside on.
Which is one of the greatest vehicles of all time. You know, I've looked at some car auctions over the weekend forthcoming. There's one at Goodwood. There's one at Bicester Heritage Centre. None of them have a vehicle anywhere close to what that's like. So for people who have no idea what we're talking about, what is Brassic and who is the main gang?
The main gang. So we are a gang of best mates who are tearing around the north of England, having a laugh, making a go of it, and trying to make as much money as possible, getting up to various vaguely criminal activities, but all with a kind of a heart of gold. And we're not very good at what we do, so we rarely ever do it right or get the money or...
Yeah.
And so in all of the funny things that you can imagine happening to a gang of lovable idiots, that's very much on show.
A constant ship of fools foolishly planning all the time. The plan is usually there's no plan, but they pretend to have one.
Exactly.
Who are the main players on the team sheet?
So we've got Vinny, played by Joseph Gilgan. We've got Aaron, played by Michelle Keegan. We've got Tomo, Ryan Sampson. We have Aaron Heffernan, who plays Ash. We've Tom Hansen, who plays Cardi. We've got Brona Gallagher, who plays Carol. We've got awesome. Dominic West, who plays the worst GP on the planet.
Or the best.
Or the best. Very, very fair. So we've got this great gang of pals. And of course, we've got Steve Evatt, our farmer, who has questionable views on everything. So
episode one, because the great thing is every episode has so much going on. It's the classic three-story arc sitcom, isn't it? So, you know, there's the main arc and there's arc A, B and C, and that's how it works. But they're fantastic. And there's loads of movement. There's loads of road shots. Everyone's a little mini road movie somehow. There's always lots of vehicular action in there. The main thrust of episode one of season four, I think we could say, is that somebody's getting married.
Yes, thank you for reminding me. Yes, so Babs is getting married.
To
Ringo.
Who's ahead of the ball. Everybody's ahead of the ball, aren't they?
There's lots of travelling. There's lots of journeys in Brassic. So we head off on a journey to find Aaron. The end of series three, Aaron went missing.
Right. Aaron happens to maybe be, via Dr. Dominic's...
NHS search.
NHS, illegal NHS search. She may be within 60 miles of this wedding as well.
Yes.
All in Wales.
Exactly.
So we've got a lot of Welsh travelling countryside shots going on.
Exactly. And we were filming in Wales and bizarrely one of the branded Sky vans that has all of our faces on the Brassic van pulled into the car park where we were filming.
Yes.
And we were like, oh my God, Sky have sent down the Brassic van to say hello to us. And he was like, I just stopped in for a packet of crisps and a cup of coffee. It was really funny. So obviously then we spent the rest of the afternoon getting shots of ourselves beside the Brassic van and driving the Brassic van and getting no work done. So that's a kind of a regular day on Brassic.
So season five, I understand it's underway.
Yeah, filming at the moment.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really exciting.
I remember after season one, you didn't know whether you had a season two or a three.
Yeah.
And here you are, five series in.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I, you know, if you were to ask me what we filmed on a day-to-day basis, I wouldn't even be able to tell you what the difference between the various episodes are, because every day is insane.
Yeah. Just give us a bit of a scoop without giving anything away. Season 5, how much have you been involved in filming season 5 so far?
None yet.
Oh, right, okay. But have you heard from the gang what's going on?
Yes.
Where might they be? What might they be doing? More of the same?
More of the same. I think there are big changes. I think, did someone mention, the word prison maybe? But I don't know. I don't know. And I certainly can't say any more than that.
Okay. And have you seen any of this season 4,
no,
this far?
No, I've seen none of season 4.
And have they sent you all of them?
No, but I'm going to tune in with the rest of the world
every week?
On Wednesday. Yeah, I'll probably treat myself to 2 episodes on Wednesday.
Because I've got all of them here on my laptop.
Oh,
if you want them.
Oh, my God. Yeah, please.
We can watch them
right now.
After the show.
Yeah, lovely, after the show.
And, of course, pubs and things, very much, you know, part of the secret ingredients. What happens in the pubs after filming? Anything?
Do you know what? We've matured as actors much more than the characters that we played. Series 1, we would always be in the pub after filming.
The pubs that are featured in the show?
No, never those ones.
Okay.
Mainly because those ones are only open at the weekends and we were always, you know, back home. We spend most of our time now going to bed at 8 o'clock every night and then treating ourselves to a Sunday roast and a cinema trip as a cast.
Well, you do look very well.
On the Sundays. Well.
You look very well. Damien, thanks, man. Is there anything else you want to say to people listening about Brassic as it comes back, hurtles back to our screens on Wednesday night?
Well, listen, we've got a great show called Brassic. Starts on Wednesday at 10 o'clock on Skymax, which is a show about a group of guys, group of mates, sticking together when times get tough.
And times are always tough, it would seem.
For sure.
Yeah. And happiness is an inside job.
Exactly.
Got it. Lovely. Damien, thanks, man.
Thanks for having me.
Damien Mullany, Brassic season 4 is back. Vassas, anything to add?
I love this show. I'd forgotten how much I love this show. And we go on about it every season, about how much we love it. And then I started watching episode 1 last night and I realised, oh, God, I really love this.
I forgot how good it was. Sinead, you seen it?
I've not seen it.
Okay. It's all on my laptop.
I'm going to watch. I've been sold. I've been absolutely sold.
Good.
Start from the beginning.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show.
Virgin Radio.
OK, we've heard from a bunch of incredible guests already, but still to come, Editor-in-Chief of British Vogue, Edward Enerful, chats his brilliant new memoir, A Visible Man. The amazing Aidan Turner tells us all about ITV's new thrilling drama, The Suspect. Broadcasting superstar Vanessa Feltz drops by ahead of her brand new Drive Time show on Talk TV. And Strictly Come Dancing judge Motsi Mabuse shares her riveting life story in her new book, Finding My Own Rhythm. So let's get right back to it now. Ginger Jack, who's next?
When I get spotted on a train, it's because I look a little bit like Ron Weasley. But when this next guest is spotted, he gets a modelling contract. Life can be so unfair. His new memoir, A Visible Man, is out today. Madonna sang about it, and now he runs it. How wonderful. Changing the world one cover page at a time, it's Edward Enerful!
Yeah, Edward Enerful. How are you, Edward?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Congratulations on the book and an amazing life.
Thank you.
Thus far. My first question is, have you been to Anna Wintour's house on Long Island?
I have, actually.
Of course you have. For people who don't know, who is she? What is her legend? Why is she so good at her job?
Anna is, you know, a legendary editor. She's opened the door for so many. She's championed the fashion industry from great heights. And yeah, well, you know, she opened the door for me. She employed me at US Vogue in 2004, and that sort of really helped me get to where I am today.
Okay, and I got to tell you, because your book, it just got all my juices flowing in all the right places. So
thank you.
Last night, whilst I'm finishing the book, my wife logs on our laptop and watches that amazing documentary, The September Issue.
Yes, yes.
And you're in that quite a lot. That was shot in 2007.
Yes, I was a young editor then.
Yeah, so tell us about that time and tell us about that documentary.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'd left London. I got a call from Anna's office to come and work for American Vogue, where I worked for 7 years. But I was like a fish out of water. You know, I'd been in London, you know, a cool stylist, and there I was at this institution of Americanness, so to say. And it was very, very different. You know, everything had to be approved. You know, you shoot a story, a fashion story, and you thought it was in the magazine, and next minute it'll be in the bin. So I was just making sense of everything in that film.
And what's great for me about it was, I did And no idea before I watched the documentary and read your book that the September issue is such a big deal. And of course, here we are, September the 6th. So I pick up a copy of Vogue on the way in today at the petrol station.
Oh, fantastic. With Linda Evangelista on the cover.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, is it the same for UK Vogue? And it is the same. The September issue is the big deal.
Yes. Someone says September is the January of fashion.
Yeah. And but also, we were talking today off the back of that. You know, for us, for especially parents, September, we think, is the real start of the new year. It's not really January. And you obviously feel the same. Why is it so important?
Because it's sort of the beginning of the season, as we call it. You'd have just come from the fashion week, new clothes, new ideas, and advertisers, really, that's the month they love the most. So the September issue, it's our biggest issue of the year.
And it takes longer to compile than any other issue, does it?
Well, there are more pages generally.
Right, okay.
You know, you have to work twice as hard.
And do you take US Vogue's lead? Do you sort of, because it's all Condé Nast, isn't it? So do you talk to each other about what you're going
to
do?
No, we talk to each other at the moment. You know, we're a global company. We talk to each other. We share some stories, but every country still sort of its own thing.
Yeah, okay. And when you look at now that you have the big job, you are the big dog yourself here in the UK and in Europe, do you wait for Anna's September issue? Do you compare it to yours? What you might have done, what she's done?
British women are very different. British women are original. You know, British women are incredible. Women generally are incredible. And Anna deals with American women who are also amazing. So it's two different points of view.
Yeah. When you talk in the book about 2017 when you got the call, or there were whispers saying that the previous incumbent of 20-odd years of British UK Vogue was leaving and you may have a chance of getting the job, and then you got to pitch yourself to the owners of Condé Nast. And what did you do? So first of all, the process began with you looking back through the 100 years-odd history of Vogue. Tell us how you prepared to try and bag the big gig that you now have.
I mean, you know, I went through all the old issues, looked at, you know, it's the strengths, the weaknesses, but also I looked around the world we lived in and saw, you know, so many people I saw not represented, you know, women of a certain age, you know, women of a certain size, you know, race. And I thought I wanted to create a magazine that reflected Britain today in all its glory.
And so, that was the thrust of your
pitch, yes.
Wasn't it? Because you felt anyhow that Vogue had been drifting away from Britishness for one reason or another, and it probably didn't know why, it just was.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was a sign of the times, I suppose. But, you know, that's why, you know, I guess I was brought in to, you know, sort of bring a different point of view.
So you come from Ghana, you land in Britain in Ghana. How old were you?
13.
13 years old. Okay, wet behind the ears.
Wet.
Dripping wet behind the ears. Not a pot to pee in or a window to throw it out
of. Nothing.
You know, and here we are, 37 years later, and you're a round of applause. You're the editor.
Oh, thank you.
That is so cool. I'm so pleased and so happy for you because you are such an inspiration to everybody, everyone.
Oh, thank
Look
you,
how
Chris.
Far you can go. When did you find out? What time of day was it? What day was it? Where were you? Okay, what did you do? Who were you with? Blah, 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 blah.
Well, I was in New York and I got a call from Jonathan Newhouse, who was the chairman of Condé Nast. He asked me to lunch, so I went to lunch. And he said, you know, I don't know if you're going to get this job, but, you know, can you just look at this press release for me and help me? Because I'm having problems. I looked at the press release and the press release said, Edward Enninful is the new editor of British Vogue. And I was like, you're kidding. So that's how Jonathan presented it to me.
That's a cool way of doing it, isn't it?
It was the best way. And I realized the press release was prepared and then the rest,
So what did you do next?
I literally packed up New York and moved to London with my dog and, you know, my husband at the moment.
Yeah, congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And isn't it a great story that all the things that could have and did go against you for a time, in the end, were the things that completely went for you? And that's the lesson.
Yeah, and that's why the book is called A Visible Man, because all those things are supposed to make you invisible.
So anything you'd like to say, because we'll put this as a pop-up podcast, shall we? Of course we must.
Of course.
So, and that'll be there forever. What would you like to say to people forever? Because this will be a podcast and it'll be up there until the world.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, if you're suffering, if you're going through hard times, you know, just realize that, you know, that there's light at the end of the tunnel. You know, I came to England penniless, and I wasn't supposed to be here, really. And here I am, and if I can do it, most people can, really.
Okay, and one fashion tip for us all on this Tuesday. What can make any outfit better? A for a bloke, B for a woman.
For a woman, a nice piece of jewellery, you know. And for a man, I'll say flat front trousers. All I've worn my whole life.
So not far too short. Sure.
Well, I mean, it's very brave. I mean, that's your style. What can I say?
Or foolish. Edward, thank
I
you
wish so. I could get away with short shorts.
Give it a go. Edward Enninful, his book, Invisible Man, is out now, and it's one of the most inspirational books I have ever read. So thank you, Edward. Happy Christmas. Happy Christmas.
Thank you,
Let's
Chris.
Do that, shall
Happy
we?
Christmas.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show.
Virgin Radio.
Get the big band ready. Polish that glitter ball and make sure all the sequins is stitched. Because this lady deserves strictly the finest. Her new memoir, Finding My Own Rhythm, is out today. We've all got ballroom fever here in the studio. I'm shaking my hips and my wee tushy. She gets a 10, 10, 10 from me. Please welcome Motsima Betty!
Morning, Motsi! Congratulations
morning.
On your book.
Thank you.
How was you writing it? What did you learn about yourself reflecting on your past, present and perhaps future?
Well, I have learned that I'm still finding my rhythm. I don't think we will find it. I'm learning. I'm like, oh my gosh, was that me? But it is what it is, and I stand to my truth.
Well, it's a great book. It's a great story. I've read the first half, so I've read your Old Testament.
Yes.
My colleagues have read your New Testament.
Yes.
So let's get to grips with it now. I love the part of the book where you talk about seeing a couple ballroom dance for the first time and being sort of enchanted by it, bewitched
yes.
by it. And your mum said, we need to go home now. You said, no, mum, I need to carry on watching this. You've yes. never seen it before. You no. like dancing anyway, but
yes.
you've never seen this kind of dancing.
Yeah.
You couldn't take your eyes off it. Your mum had to tear you away in the end. And you said straight away, you knew then and there, that's what you wanted to do.
Yes. Like literally, I talk a lot and it's a problem. But that was the first time that my parents, like, she's speechless. And it was awkward because they didn't even know where to start about this ballroom dancing, but it caught on, and I loved it. I loved the dresses, I loved the performance. My parents love music, so it combined everything in like one type of dancing.
So did you have to convince them, or how did that work?
No, I didn't have to convince them. I was just like, okay, that's what we're going to do. And my mom was like, okay, my kids want to do this. This is what we're going to do. And we didn't have a space to dance. So she was a kindergarten teacher and she moved the furniture. She found a friend that could do a small cha-cha-cha. The girlfriend came for the weekend and we did a cha-cha-cha. By Sunday, we could do it. So we were like, what's next? But yeah.
Isn't it funny though that you knew this is what you wanted to do and then you had a go, and in a couple of days, people could spot the fact that you had some genuine God-given talent.
Yes.
So these two ideas sort of met
yes.
together.
Yes.
Is that how you felt?
Well, I felt free for the first time.
And interesting.
It's funny to say that as a nine-year-old, but I was just like, really, when I dance, I just disappeared into my own kind of activities in my head. So I think that and the energy that I have anyway just came together, and I was like, I'm not leaving this place.
Right, and that was your language. It became your
yeah.
your most sort of your favorite language, and the one you were best at, and the one you most wanted to convey and do useful things with. And here yeah. you are now, 41 now?
41.
41. How's that feel?
It feels young when I'm around older people.
Well, you can stay as long as you like. That's that hurt so much.
No, it wasn't intended in this room.
Yeah, but that's the room we're in. There's no other room available right now. No, good for you. By the way, can I just congratulate you on that amazing jumpsuit, Rachel?
Oh, your jumpsuit, it's like a beautiful sort of lilac, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you can do anything in that jumpsuit.
Right, so you're nine. You've been dancing for 3 days.
Yes.
In your mum's kindergarten space. She brought
yeah.
your pal in. They cleared the chairs.
Yeah.
And you gave it all the beans. And they went, yeah. whoa, look at her go. What yeah. happened next?
What happened next is that we did that for the rest of our lives. Like literally, we went into the dance hall. It grew
grew and grew. We found a bigger hall. Then a lot of kids came. We moved into another hall. Then it was just the weekends. Then it was the holidays. Then it was like the week. It just became like a daily thing.
But where did you get all this? Where did you get the dancing sort of assistance from? Because it was your mum's mate, and then it was professional, and then they were paying for lessons.
Yeah.
Just give us a bit of that.
First of all, our teachers were video cassettes. Right. So we had the video cassettes, UK Open, Blackpool, and we'd watch them like crazy over. And then we met other teachers. I met my first teacher, Teboho. They were 3 hours away from us. And then they introduced, 3 hours. We drove 3 hours on the weekends and 3 hours back. And then they introduced us to another person who introduced us to international judges. So it just became this whole thing that became bigger and bigger and bigger.
In the book, this is lovely. I was born and brought up very near to Blackpool. Mm-hmm. And you talk about this documentary with Kevin and Joe Clifton.
Yes.
That you watched as a kid.
Yes.
Because they were really amazing young ballroom dancers. And their mum and dad were as well, weren't they?
Yes, exactly. But there was
this, I've never seen this documentary. Obviously, it was made years and years ago with Kevin and Joe, who are friends of ours now.
Yeah.
And obviously, they've gone on to not bigger and necessarily better things, but more sort of well-known things.
Yeah,
and in the book you say how beautiful Blackpool looked, and I'm like must have been a really good day. No reflection on Blackpool itself, just the weather in the northwest is not amazing, but Blackpool is very much the beating heart of ballroom dancing, isn't it?
Yes, it is till this day. It's just iconic, and you know, the minute you walk as a dancer in our dance industry, when you walk into that winter garden and you see the lights and the atmosphere, it's like you've come into dance heaven. And it was always exclusive for the older couples. I really didn't think that younger couples have their Blackpool. So seeing Kevin,
cool.
And I was like, this is what I'm meant to do. This is where I need to go. Yeah. Not Las Vegas, not Hollywood, Blackpool.
So you went to Germany?
Yeah. Why? Why did you say that?
Right, so how the heck did you get to Germany? And it's very significant and pivotal in your whole
career,
journey, isn't it?
Yes. I met a young German boy, and he showed interest in my personality. And then, I moved there. It felt kind of safe at that point. And it would have been something that I said to my parents, I'm doing it for a year. And now it's been 21 years, and I still live in Germany, and I travel. Yeah, it's my home.
Mossy, it's great to meet you.
Very,
seriously,
very
you've
nice.
Got great energy. Really good. And you're only 41. You've got years to come. You got years. If you want it, you've got years to come in the spotlight. And I know you love the old spotlight, which is great. Thanks so much.
Thank you, guys. It was so great.
Okay. And also, Matsy's off to our favourite post-show engagement. She's off to This Morning.
Yes.
This Morning. Give our love to those guys.
I will. Thank you.
Cheers, Mossy.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show.
Virgin Radio.
Want to get your blood pumping? Well, no need to go to an overpriced theme park or drive a flashy car, because when this guest is on the screen, your heart will be racing. He stars in 5-part psychological thriller The Suspect, which airs on Monday nights at 9 p.m. on ITV. His career is on fire. It's even hotter than a Bunsen burner. A master of thriller, please say hello to Aidan Dunner!
Look at that smile.
Oh, wow.
Hi, Aidan.
How are you doing? What an introduction.
How good is he?
That's amazing.
Please take him with you. You're welcome. Thanks, Jack. That was absolutely awesome. How are you, my friend?
I'm really good.
So the last time we saw each other was backstage in your dressing room.
That's right. I was a very sweaty, bloody, post-show actor. Yeah.
Just to remind everybody what that was, it was a fantastic play, by the way.
Yeah, it was the Lieutenant of Inishmore, Mark McDonough play, and it was at the Noel Coward Theatre. I was trying to work out how many years ago, I think 4 or 5.
Well,
possibly,
I'd say maybe more than that even. Wow. Who knows, eh? Wow. But time flies, doesn't it? You're looking really well.
Thank you.
Seriously.
Cheers.
There's been a lot of talk about that beard.
Oh, has there now?
Do you know about this?
I suspect. expected there might be. Yeah, it's a different look, but it seems to make sense for the character.
No, it makes. Don't be defensive about it. Just enjoy it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So you had a suspicion about the suspect and the beard.
Sure.
All right, let's get right into this. Aidan Turner, the suspect, ITV. Can you frame it for people who've not joined it yet? Because you can still join it. First two episodes have already aired. Episode 3 this week. But of course, on the ITV Hub, you can catch up. And what's going on?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a 5-part psychological thriller. I play Joe, who is a psychologist, and he has he's working with the police to try and find out who killed this young girl who was found in a London cemetery. But as we watch the show, we can kind of figure out as an audience that Joe knows a little bit too much about this person, this victim, and. Yeah, we're trying to figure out as an audience how much she's involved.
Beautifully teased there.
It's really hard to tease this show. I find I ruin it all the time. I say too much. I give away too much. I've tried to do it with friends and family and I blow it. So, yeah, I'm always nervous about saying too much.
I thought that was pretty good, aren't you, Rachel?
I thought that was a perfect upsum. So I've watched the first episode and I was gripped. Because, I mean, from the first 5 minutes, the tension is sky high. And then, as you say, it just starts to drip in. You think you know what's happening and then you don't.
Right, yeah, that's kind of the idea. I mean, as an audience or as a reader myself reading the scripts, I mean, that's something that I always find very interesting. You don't know what the deal is with the protagonist or whether the protagonist is an antagonist, and you're trying to figure out where they lie in the story. So I think Joe is a pretty shady guy. Well, we think he is.
He may be putting the psycho in psychologist.
Possibly.
Vassas, what's your take?
I thought it was very undoing-y because... You kind of...
Is that okay?
Yeah, sure.
You know Hugh Grant, and you sort of love him, but you sort of think, yeah, but is he a murderer? Quite keen to know if you
like,
did it.
Sure.
But you've given a bit too much away there, Vassos. You didn't go to the school of how to tease without spoiling.
Well, no, because episode 1 aired 2 weeks ago, and that's all I've seen.
Yeah.
So I feel like I'm on safe ground here.
Right,
if I'd seen episodes 3, 4 and 5, which haven't aired yet, and then I gave away, you know...
Spider-Man's Parallel Universe.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, okay. I mean, I am the master of giving stuff away, but I just don't feel like I know enough to give this away, although I would if I did.
Aidan, give him some tips, will you, please? Aidan Turner, give Vassas Alexander some tips. Come on.
I don't know how to give you tips on that. I'm terrible at it too. I'm terrible at teasing these things. I don't know what to say. When's the next episode out? Next week, next Monday.
Monday.
I think more will be revealed then.
Well, hopefully, otherwise there's no point in the rest of the series.
Possibly.
Even though, so, Vassas, you clearly didn't watch it via the ITV press platform. You watched it via the Hub, did you?
Yeah, I just watched it on the telly.
You watched it on the telly.
And unbeknownst to me, our 8-year-old daughter was in the room. She just saw the first bit, the hero bit with the ledge. It's already been on telly.
But you hadn't seen it till last night, and other people may not be seeing it because we're encouraging people to go to it.
There may or may not be a hero bit with a ledge.
Stop it!
There may or may not be.
Yeah.
He did say may not be.
There might not be a hero bit with a ledge
at the very beginning of the show.
Do you know what? You're anything but a ledge, mate. There was a time... Because you were in a Hobbit thing and because you've been in a Poldark thing, I know there's Comic Con. Have you done Comic Cons?
Yeah.
With the Hobbit?
Yeah.
We can talk about that a lot now because they're massive. Aren't they? There's huge deals, aren't they?
Yeah, the big one in San Diego and there's a few of them around, yeah.
And is there a Poldark Con?
No, but there are other sort of, there's a, like a London Comic Con thing. There's all different sort of variants of these Comic Con festivals. There's like fan events that sometimes pop up.
Poldark ones?
I don't know if there's a, no, I don't think there's a Poldark one, but you will often get Poldark things to sign.
What does that mean?
It can mean anything.
Things, come on.
I mean, yeah.
Poldark things to sign.
I meant like, you
a
know,
horse.
Photographs.
Here's my horse, will you sign it?
You might get tiny horses to sign. Yeah, yeah.
Or tiny horses.
Yeah, or figurines or like knitted Poldark characters. Yeah, all sorts of stuff. People's arms. Yeah, it can get weird.
I think we talked about that before. So 2019 was when you left Poldarkshire.
Yeah.
Have you been back to Cornwall?
I have not been back to Cornwall, no.
Right.
But I do want to go back. It seems like a long way away from London, but no, there will be a time when I go back soon. I miss it.
Okay, good. Is there anything you'd like to say to our audience before you go? It's been great to see you again, Pat.
It's great to see you again. No, just catch up with The Suspect. I think we already gave it a lot of plugs, but yeah, it's on the ITV Hub, and it's Monday nights at 9 o'clock ITV.
Yeah, and it's all very good. It's a very professional and competent affair. It's very gripping. Mira watched it on her own last night. She was scared. Okay. Scared. What's the word? I know the word I'm going to say is...
I know too.
Scared silly-less. Scared silly-less is what
works.
She was. And almost no spoilers there from Vassos.
Yeah, I'm being careful now. Did we work out if Joe killed her?
No. We... What is wrong with him? What is wrong with this man that I work with?
It's very good.
I tell you, I was so stressed after watching it. I had to watch another episode of Brassic. Have you seen Brassic? Have you heard of Brassic?
I've heard of it.
Oh, you've got to watch it, Aidan.
It's worth watching.
That's my gift to you. Watch
okay,
Brassic.
Thank you. I'll
have you seen Ted Lasso?
Yes, I have.
Have you seen The Rehearsal?
The Rehearsal?
Yeah.
No, I don't know what
that
is.
Watch The Rehearsal. What's the French thing again about the talent agency?
Oh, the Call My Agent.
Call My Agent. You seen that?
That's on the list as well. I don't watch a lot of TV.
No, nor do I. But when I, but it's never been better, has it, TV?
Yeah, right.
It's never been better. All right, that's Aidan Turner. Off he pops. The Suspect, episode 3 of 5 continues Monday, 9 p.m. You can catch up on all of the episodes so far, though, on the ITV Hub, which is what we did last night. Aidan, thank you.
Thank you so much.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show.
Virgin Radio.
Times are hard, and you don't always know where to turn. But finally, we have a voice for the people, a figure for the future, and someone who's looking out for you. Our next guest takes over on Talk TV's weekday drive time show today from 4 till 7 p.m. She tells your truth no matter who upsets. Please welcome a broadcasting legend, it's Vanessa Fair!
Oh, I thought I was going to get some kind some type of intro. This is very understated.
We can only apologise.
What a damn squib that was, quite frankly. My
God. The normal bloke's got a dental appointment. I can only apologise.
Well done, sir. Well
it's
done.
It's so nice to see you.
I can't even believe I'm looking at your lovely face.
Because we are proper mates, aren't we? We haven't seen each other for ages, but we're proper mates.
Proper mates. What about when we used to have the Friday hug? I used to look forward to it all week.
I know, and you were always so nice to me back at the old place, and we had a proper friendship, and it's amazing when you work in this business in a sort of labyrinthine studio complex like this. Sometimes you don't see people ever that you work with, but we always made a point of seeing each other. In fact, you were better at that than me, and you taught me how to do it, so thank you.
Oh, it's a real pleasure. It's completely and utterly magnificent to see you again, and really extraordinary to be in this brand new, shiny, happy, lovely environment at this stage in my life and at this stage in the day, and just everything about it is, I'm well overexcited, as you can probably tell.
Good, good, it's great. And once again, your burden is light.
Yes.
How does that feel?
It feels fantastic. Yeah. What about the fact that I may actually sleep a bit? That might be good.
Yeah.
Think how beautiful I'll be when I've slept. Exquisite. So that's Vassos. I can't believe I'm seeing the lovely Vassos.
We've been
collide in the lift. I always hoped to collide with him in the lift. Colliding with him in the lift was fabulous.
I used to make a point of it, Vanessa.
How do we do that here? 17 floors.
Yes. There'll 17 be a long floors collision. Of opportunity.
I would like to collide with him over 17 floors. Yes, please. Yes,
please. So the first thing, the most important thing is, and by the way, feel free to ask any questions on the air or off the air about working here. But the most important thing that nobody's probably nobody's told you, just because it doesn't occur to them, is you know your pass, pass to get in.
Yeah.
So what happens is when you present your pass to the barcode reading device, the digital recognition device, it then knows where you're going and it calls the lift for you. So then when you walk through the turnstile, the lift, because there are 8 lifts here, there are actually 16 because each shaft has 2. But when you there'll be a lift, the doors will be open. That's already knows where you want to go. That's one reason for coming to work
here. I had
here.
That written into my contract. I had a sedan chair at the top of the escalator to carry me to the lift, which is already open and has some lovely chicken soup just gently warming in the corner to sustain me as I go up the 17 floors. I'm not impressed by the door opening. It's a lot more than I've demanded. I've become very, very demanding in my old age. Very.
We like the diva aspect of Vanessa.
I just like the way you're just yourself, just talking about buttons and levers and electronics. electronic thing, as if I give an absolute damn about that sort of stuff. You know I don't care about that.
No, I know.
How the lift intimately connects to the machinery.
But it's cool,
machinery.
Though.
What do I don't care?
No, but I know it's
I'm
not
a girl,
that.
I like girl stuff, well, no, not that stuff.
No, but here's the thing. I'm just, all I'm saying is, when you go through the security bit, if you hadn't called a lift, that's already.
I know you love saying that.
Done.
You want to tell me that again?
I just
about
want to tell you again.
Okay,
it could save you years of your life.
I'm thrilled by that. Really, thrilled. That's the only reason I came. That lift thing. I love that. The pass and the lift are intimately connected.
What a day for you to start! Now you're not just on the radio; you're on the telly.
Yes.
So it's Talk TV and Talk Radio from 4 o'clock this afternoon, Monday through Friday. Vanessa Feltz is back. Because we've been getting up at silly o'clock for the last 20 years. But you get up, or have been getting up, even earlier than we do.
Yeah, I've been live on air at 4 a.m.
What is that like?
Well, when you're doing it, it's fabulous. Because you're talking to people who are doing all the stuff that keeps the country alive and afloat. You know, all the people everyone was clapping for in the pandemic. So everybody who's mending the bridges overnight and tending to the transport system and saving lives and climbing up horrible things in the dark. Those people, those amazing people. So you feel fab. The rest of your life, you feel absolutely terrible. You're completely nuked and absolutely knackered and, oh, it's, you know, difficult. And I felt as if I was my own unpleasant headmistress, bossing myself around all the time. Go to bed. Don't do that. Fun? No. You know, dessert? No time. You know, the person that's actually the big concluding act of this fabulous concert? No. You've got to be going home in your coach just like Cinderella. And who wants to be Cinderella? I don't.
So you, the last time you put in a decent shift wasn't that long ago at the other place, was it?
No, last week.
So because we took, obviously we were away for a bit of gardening leave, but you're straight from one into the other.
I've had 1 week off. So I was interviewing Rishi Sunak on the Jeremy Vine show last week.
Right.
Yeah. Week before last, yeah.
Okay. And how was he? What did you sense from him?
I sensed a lot of stuff, actually. He was exceptionally charming and polite and delightful. So you immediately thought, would I like to have dinner with him? Yeah. Would I like to be stuck with him in a lift for 17 floors? Him or Vassos? It's a contest. Well, I don't know.
You're going back to the elevators. You've come to the right place.
But I'm at the more human part of the elevator. You're much more the mechanics of the elevator. But so charming and delightful, yes. And then he said this thing that I thought was absolutely cataclysmic, which was, if I lose, I lose. I have to be honest. I have to say what I think honestly. And if I lose, I lose. And I thought that was the top line that every paper would go with. They didn't. They went with the scoop, which was, I don't want to serve under Liz Truss in the government. Which was also part of the conversation. But I thought the key thing was, if I lose, I lose. What kind of a leader can ever either say that or think that?
Did you, and of course, you said all this on the BBC.
Of course. I never said a word about it. I said, thank you very much, Rishi Sunak.
It's so funny. Because listening to Jeremy anyway on his show, just you know, holding back, simmering inside, but not being able to sort of say anything that he thinks. You can almost hear what he thinks anyway. Oh, sure. But listening, knowing you much better than I know Jeremy, when you first sat in for him, I thought, oh, this is interesting. Because you're doing all the things you have to do, mm-hmm. but I knew there was so much more going on under the water.
I mean, I did say to Rishi Sunak, now hang on a minute. Yeah. You know, and also he said twice, you can't have your cake and eat it. You can't have your cake and eat it. And I said, but Boris said exactly the opposite. Boris Johnson said, my policy on cake is A, having it, and B, eating it. And that got him elected. Surely we all want to have it and eat it.
It's the bake-off. He's you know, it's the bake-off.
You know, it all boils down to cake in this country.
Of course
always,
it does.
Doesn't it?
It's 3 minutes to nine, which means we're at the top of the tower, heading for the top of the hour with Vanessa Feltz.
Yay!
On Talk Radio and Talk Television from 4 o'clock today. She's in the house. She's part of the gang. She's on the firm. Woohoo!
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show.
Virgin Radio.
Okay, that's it. Thank you so much for listening to our Breakfast Show podcast. Catch you next time.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.